everyone has a responsibility to be thinking about their own retirement. So I kind of thought that the topic today would be what's called the new retirement, but let's learn about what is today's definition of retirement. I think it's changed.
Sure. When Social Security first began, life expectancy was only 61, and when you retired at 65, you'd already exceeded life expectancy. So it's easy to have a retirement when you retire at 65 and you're dead by 72. The money sort of takes care of itself. You only have to support 7 years. But today, people retire at 65, and a couple retiring at 65, there's a very good chance that one of them will still be alive at 95 or 100. And so there's a whole 30 years. It's another lifetime for planning. And people are not as frail as they were. Life expectancies are longer. And so retirement is not no longer the inability to work. Retirement is now financial freedom. And it's the freedom to be able to be freed from necessarily needing your vocation anymore to earn a living.
Well, it's interesting because I remember as a kid thinking about retirement and thinking about, you know, grandma and grandpa sitting out on the rocking chair on the front porch and just doing nothing. That's not retirement anymore either. Was it ever?
I think at a time of lower life expectancies, it was perhaps. But now it's more moving from you've been successful, you've made a career, you've made a living. And most people view their retirement as now an opportunity to have more significance. And so people are doing things that they've never had an opportunity to do because finances are not an option. So the retirement questions today are not necessarily do you have enough money, but do you have a purpose in life? And they found that there's three things you need to get right in retirement. Finances, which unfortunately most of the baby boom generation has not gotten right. It's actually the easiest piece to get right. But more significantly, the finances within money, but then mental and physical health, which is important, and also their purpose and their social networks and their reason for living. Because retirement is a whole series of maybe 30 or 35 years.
How many people, and this is not a statistical question, but in your talking to people, how many people on their own make all of those evaluations or even a significant number of them?
Yeah, I've heard statistics. They're hard to believe, but the average person at age 65 has $8,000 to their name, and therefore they cannot retire at age 65. Now, obviously, the people who come to a financial planner have done a better job of that, but it means that at least half of America is not prepared for retirement and is not even close to being prepared. And I've always thought politically that the first responsibility of a citizen is at least to take care of themselves so that we can help the truly needy. And the truly needy should be a very small minority, but in fact the truly needy are half of America today.
And it's very interesting, and I'm envisioning stores that I go into around town that have people of retirement age or even people who appear to be significantly beyond retirement age working there in retail jobs. And I must say, first of all, that I appreciate that as a customer and a consumer because I think the attitude is a whole lot better and the service is much, much better. But I'm thinking of somebody who's 65 or maybe even 70 years old working up at Lowe's and packing lumber or doing something else. It probably wasn't what they envisioned doing when they left career number one, whatever that was.
No, retirement second careers are becoming more and more common, partly because they're necessary, partly because at 60 people are still active, and 60 is what used to be 40 or 50. Even 70 is what used to be 50 or 60. My father is 81. He just finished teaching a sophomore seminar class out at Stanford University. The only thing he's ever really failed at is retirement because he's having too much fun and he's much too active. So I think that is the new retirement. And I think it's one way to keep yourself mentally and physically fit. If you retire and you have a sedentary lifestyle, the money will take care of itself because those are the people who die young. But if you keep yourself active, those are the people who have the physical and mental capacity to keep themselves active. I used to think the cause and effect was the other way. People who weren't mentally and physically fit would have a sedentary lifestyle. Now I've realized it's the exact opposite. People who have a sedentary lifestyle often dwindle in retirement and die young.
And, you know, just thinking about it logically, I mean, who would really just want to sit around and do nothing? I mean, do you run into people who really say, that's the lifestyle I want? I don't want to do anything when I'm done. I just want to watch TV or something?
No, it's, you know, if you ask people what their dreams are in retirement, most people will have a dream. Sometimes it's escaping a difficult job, but usually it's then looking to do something else. And sometimes you can help a client the best simply by, if they're trying to escape a difficult job, helping them find the career asset management and the career planning to be able to find the job they love. If you can find a job that you love, even if you take a pay cut in the process, your earning potential for the next decade more than surpasses retirement and then having to live off of your assets.
With the tax situation as it is and as it may be, do you envision that more and more people are going to have to work till later years just because it appears that wealth will be taken by the government as opposed to remaining in people's pockets?
Yeah, I mean, one of the political debates right now is over capital gains tax. And if you think about putting assets into investments, let's say you make a conservative 8% return. If inflation is running at 5% and you're going to tax capital gains not at 15%, but you're going to raise that to 28%, then you'll have 5% inflation and 3% capital gains tax, and you'll make no headway on your investments. So the capital gains tax is actually one of the political issues that isn't even on the table for discussion, and it should be. That should be one of the primary debates within our society today.
Why do you know, capital gains tax always struck me as being wrong because you've already been taxed on the money, but why do we have a capital gains tax? Do you know the genesis of that tax and what the thought was going into it?
It used to be that a capital gains tax was viewed as a tax on the very rich because the rich have most of the investments. The difficulty with that is now all of us have investments, and that's been a product of a change in retirement philosophies. Our parents and grandparents had a defined benefit plan, and a defined benefit plan meant you worked for the company for 30 years, and when you retired, they would continue to pay you a salary till you died. The days of defined benefit plans are mostly completely gone. Now we have defined contribution plans, which means it's up to you to contribute to your retirement. And when you contribute to your retirement, you will have only what you've contributed and only the growth on the retirement. Now, fortunately for retirement vehicles, you don't have to pay capital gains tax. The interesting thing about that is you do have to pay ordinary income tax when you take it out. So all of the gains, which could have been at capital gains tax rates, are now converted into ordinary income tax rates. They did a study recently in the federal government, and there's so much baby boomer money in IRAs and 401ks that when they take that money out and they get taxed at ordinary income tax rates, it's scheduled to pay for a third of our federal deficit right now.
Wow.
Now, that's not even on the books. So it's not something that's computed with the federal government. And if you think about it, people who were in low tax brackets when they were just getting started are now in high tax brackets when they retire. They've actually lost money by putting it in a 401k or an IRA because they put it in when they were poor and not making much money, and they're taking it out now when they're making a lot of money and in a much higher tax bracket, if for no other reason than due to inflation.
In looking at what we're doing here in America and contrasting it, and I'm not sure if you have expertise in what's going on in other countries, but is there any other country that's really doing it right as far as tax policy and retirement? Is there someone that we could learn from?
Chile has probably the most interesting. They have had privatized Social Security for a long time, and it appears to be working well. So we have Social Security in this country. Social Security return rates are probably negative for most Americans. We probably would have done better putting it into the bank instead of Social Security. So Social Security as a system is relatively broken and probably will not end up meeting most people's retirement. My guess is for Social Security, they will probably have to cut it off. And if you have any assets, you will get no Social Security. It will just be a safety net for the very poor.
News Radio 1070 WINA. It is 125. David Murata is our guest. He's the president of Murata Asset Management. 977-1070 is the phone number. If you'd like to join in, jump into the call hall. We have lines open for you right now at 977-1070, and we will welcome your call. So the whole thing of Social Security, why has it gotten to the point that it is? I mean, we hear from everybody that Social Security can't be relied upon, yet I don't think we're hearing that specifically from our elected officials. Why have we gotten to this place with Social Security, and do you see any way that it's going to be salvaged, or do you think it's definitely going to go the way you said, where it's just a safety net and a bunch of us get cut off?
There's one interesting proposal. It's been shot down several times politically, and because Social Security is still the third rail of politics. But the interesting proposal is this: if you take the youngest workers and you make the and you have them pay their portion privatized and the government portion into the Social Security system, so they get to put half of theirs into a privatized system. The half they put into the privatized system will ultimately grow and cover more than they would have received in Social Security. That means the other half of their Social Security can still continue to pay benefits for the baby boom generation. If you let that go long enough, then their Social Security will be taken care of and there'll be a surplus with the extra that they're paying. In other words, younger workers can put half into a privatized system and still get more than they get in Social Security. So if you let the markets work long enough, then there's a safety net. So if you have bad investments, you still fall back on the Social Security level. But if you have good investments, then you get more than Social Security, and that ultimately would take care of the Social Security problem.
How likely is that to happen?
Yeah, that's got a chance of zero, which is why I think probably we will cut benefits for anyone who is wealthy. And wealthy is going to mean you have over a few $100,000 in your 401k. Then you're going to have to use all that up before you are able to take Social Security.
Won't there be a huge outcry? I mean, what is that going to look like for people who have been promised that I've been paying into this thing for all these years? What socially, what's that going to look like in America?
Yeah, the country that or the party that proposes that and does that will have to start with the very rich being cut off from Social Security and work their way backwards until Social Security is solvent. If you think about it, no one thought that Social Security benefits would ever be taxed. It was a tax taken away from you in the first place. And when they decided to tax Social Security benefits, no financial planner ever thought that that was possible. And yet it happened. So here's another case where no one thinks that that's possible, but at some point it will become necessary. And it will make sense because they'll start with the very rich. And so long as you start with the rich, say the top 40%, the bottom 60% will be for it.
Yeah, the frog is in the pot and the water is tepid right now, but it will be turned up. It is 1:27 here on The Shilling Show as we continue discussion with David Morata. We're going to head over to the 24-hour local news center. Jacqueline P. Marini is going to deliver the news for you. And then more with David Morata. 977-1070 is the phone number. The Shilling Show will return. So, David, let's talk a little bit about the steps to take for retirement. And when you're thinking about retirement, what are the very first steps? What are the baby steps?
Yeah, the very first step is to put away a piece of your income every single year. And we recommend that that's 15%. If you save 15% of your income from the time you're 20 to the time you're 65, you should be adequately funding your retirement.
And is that gross or net?
15% of your standard of living, so it would be net.
Okay, all right.
And we recommend that you do 10% of that maybe toward your retirement vehicles and 5% toward taxable savings, because it's important to have some taxable wealth that you can spend before retirement if you need it.
Okay. News Radio 1070, WINA 977-1070 is the phone number. We welcome your calls here for David Morata. Let's go over to line number one and welcome Tom to the show. Hey, Tom, you're on with David. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Rob. And Dave, I always enjoy your articles and your perspective on financial planning. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
I, as a matter of fact, spent 25 years as a chartered financial consultant and chartered life underwriter. And the more I spent helping my clients save and preserve their money over their lifetime, the more I began to shake my head at the various clever ways that the government finds, and if you'll excuse my bluntness, the government finds to steal money from the public, especially the most vulnerable of the public. Since you were talking about Social Security, it reminded me of how I really became embittered about what the government does with regard to Social Security, the deceit of the program, mainly when I started to discover that, you know, so many of my clients would retire or thought they had retired, but 10 years later they decide to go back to work. And what they discover when they go back to work is, guess what, I've been drawing Social Security based on my earnings. Now I have to again begin paying Social Security taxes on my earnings while I'm retired, which not only might reduce the benefit I receive from Social Security, but I paid Social Security taxes on all that new income, and it never changes the benefit I ever receive. Just another way of taking it away and never giving it back.
Yes, Social Security is unfair on many different levels. We were talking over the break. Social Security is unfair to people who are working in retirement. It's unfair in terms of how it handles a husband and wife working. It discourages a wife whose husband makes a significant amount of money or a husband whose wife makes a significant amount of money. It also discourages minorities and the poor because minorities and poor tend to die young. If they had that money and they could have invested it on their own, they could have left a legacy to their families. When they die young, they just help the Social Security dig out of its hole. So you're right.
The other thing, Dave, is, you know, you'd think with all those unfairnesses that, gee, our congressman would decide that, gee, this is not a system I want to be a part of. I think I'll come up with something different for me.
You'd think, but common sense in Congress usually can't be used in the same sentence.
But Congress has done that. They're not subject to the same Social Security rules that the rest of us are. They got their own federal retirement program, and they allow themselves benefits that you and I could never touch.
It's true.
All right, Tom. Hey, great call. Thank you very much. And you raise a lot of really good points. And I'm glad you brought up that whole fairness issue, because we have a lot of people that are always talking about fairness in government at all levels. And obviously, there is a lot of disparity in that particular program. So we talked about, you know, setting aside some of your income, and 15%. That's a good figure. Probably would be hard for somebody at first who's used to living on the edge, but that's never a good idea anyway, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's sort of a financial life cycle to savings. The first one is before you're married, before you have kids. We sort of call that the pre-child surplus of income. And you're usually fresh out of school, and sometimes it's actually the easiest time to save. When I graduated from college, I was used to thinking that $10,000 was more money than you'd ever need. And when my wife and I got married right after school, we put away over half of our income into savings. That, it turned out to be, was the best possible decision we could have made. So a lot of people, when they're just fresh out of college, they finally have some money, they have this long list of things they want to buy, and they're very proud of themselves for living off 100% of their income. That actually is the best time to save. If you can live off 50% of your income and chalk the rest away, you will have funded your retirement forever.
And that's what's so hard about today's lifestyle, is that a lot of these kids want it now. You know, they grow up and they've become accustomed to how their parents, you know, furnished the house and the sort of cars. And they said, well, you know, I'm 25, I'm out of college, I've got a credit card, you know, I want to go get that right now. A car is not an investment, is it?
No, it's not. An investment is anything that pays you money. So cars don't pay you money. In fact, they're just sinkholes for gas and repairs.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are some assumptions that people should make. And I saw this list of six assumptions, things that people need to think about in benchmarking and evaluating retirement. Let's talk about the first one. What assumptions can or should we make about inflation?
Yeah, inflation is probably running a lot higher than the official numbers. And in fact, the article coming out on this Monday is on how the government underreports inflation. And it's sort of difficult to talk about. I just finished watching the movie Conspiracy Theory.
Yes.
And in the beginning of the movie, Mel Gibson plays a taxi cab driver that you're clear is completely off his rocker and insane. But by the end of the movie, all of his conspiracy theories have been proven to be true. I'm always afraid when I talk about how the government underreports inflation that I'll appear as Mel Gibson at the beginning of the movie. But I think enough people have seen that inflation, the official inflation numbers aren't anything close to what real inflation is that everyone has to deal with every day, to know that we're closer to the end of the movie when it doesn't sound such a crackpot idea. But inflation officially is running between 3 and 4%. Unofficially, if you compute it the way they used to compute inflation, it's running over 7%.
And so, what was the change? Was it just to make everything look better?
Yeah, partly. It was made in 1996 under the Clinton administration and continued under the Bush administration. And what they did was they said, first of all, we're going to use what they call hedonic deprecators. And what it means is that computer that you buy this year, it costs the same as the computer you buy last year, but it's twice as fast. So we will count that as negative 50% inflation.
Oh, my goodness.
Because you're getting so much more value out of it. And so there's all these hedonic deprecators. The car from 1970, they say, wouldn't even be called a car today because cars today have CDs and airbags and electronic power windows. Well, the point is you still have to buy a car and it still costs a lot of amount of money. You can't buy what they used to call a car in 1970. So basically because of the decline in price of electronics and the increase in features of cars, people on Social Security and fixed incomes can't eat because the price of eggs and milk are going up by 10 to 30%.
This is amazing, and I'm wondering what Bean Counter actually thought that up, because I've never heard an explanation of it, and I'm just astounded that very intelligent people would stand idly by and accept the current inflation figures, given what you just told me.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. And so what we try to say is, unless you have your money in assets that are appreciating with the real inflation plus something on top of that, you're not really making headway toward your retirement goals. And so it means you have to put your money into businesses. There's three different asset classes that you can use that will protect your money against the falling value of a dollar. And they're foreign bonds, foreign stocks, and hard asset stocks, things like oil, natural gas, real estate investment trusts. And we recommend people have at least half their money in those three asset classes.
And we certainly have seen a falling dollar in recent years. 977-1070, the phone number. Let's go over to line number two and welcome Peter to the Shilling Show. Hey, Peter, how are you?
Hi, Rob. How are you? David, how are you?
Doing good.
The discussion on inflation. I guess the thing I've always been troubled with is inflation should have really, I mean, everybody has experiences a different amount of inflation. It could be based on your age, if you consume medical services, or it could be if you're going to college and college rates are going up, or you're paying for your kids to go. How do you deal with that aspect? I don't know that one number suits all.
Yeah, and that's exactly why we have inflation numbers that are all over the map. It turns out that you have to make a distinction between a basket of goods and services which are required to live and a basket of goods and services which may be typical for people to buy. So eggs, bread, milk, gasoline, medical insurance, college costs, these are all the things that are undergoing the highest inflation. It's a lot of the discretionary things like entertainment and electronics, which are undergoing lower inflation. But even there, it's not really lower inflation, it's just increased productivity. So the fact that we make electronics better should just be a byproduct of a boon for living in the 21st century, when in fact what the government does is it counts that against official inflation figures and says, no, we're going to count on you living back in the 1950s. And so they're taking all the productivity gains since the 1950s and they're discounting inflation by that amount. Now, why do they do that? It's an interesting question. They do that because two reasons. One, it limits Social Security payments and any other kind of defined entitlement program by the federal government. So that's why both the Republicans and the Democrats are, in a sense, for this underreporting. Second, it pushes middle-class wage earners into higher tax brackets, because all of the tax brackets are indexed for inflation. So if you underreport inflation, you keep the tax brackets low while wages continue to go up higher than that. So it increases revenue to the federal government and it decreases the spending and it makes us look like we're doing better. One more thing it does, which is sort of strange, and that is it actually makes it look like the economy is growing when we in fact may be in a recession. So the fact that the economy might be in a recession right now, but officially it's not, because the inflation numbers are inflating what the gross domestic product is.
Peter, I'm wondering if you might want to take a little bit of your spare time and start a group called the Truth in Inflation Alliance.
Could happen, Rob.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Hey,
David.
Peter, thank you for the call. All right. News Radio 1070 WINA. That leaves a line open for you right now at 977-1070 as we head into the final segment with David Murata, president of Murata Asset Management. If people want to get in touch with you, David, tell us how they can do so. You have a website probably?
Yeah, our website is www.emurata.com, and you can also send an email to questions@emurata.com. That's emarotta.com.
All right. It is 1:47. The Shilling Show will return right after this.
Typically, an average return for bond investments is about 3% over inflation. And for equity or stock investments, it's about 6.5% over inflation. Now, that's an average return, and unfortunately, the stock market never returns the average. Typically, if inflation is at 5%, the average stock return is about 11, 11.5%. But it doesn't return 10 to 12% even. In fact, if you look at the last 70 years in the stock market, the number of years it returned 10 to 12, I think, is 3 or 4.
Wow.
So typically what it does is it does 19%, 19%, 19%, negative 10.
Well, let's talk about this, because we're living in a different world also, and we're living in a world in which information travels very quickly. We're also living under a constant threat, I believe, of significant terror event in the United States. You could probably tell me, but I would imagine that what happened after September 11th in the stock market was not pretty. As someone who's looking ahead, do you figure into some of these assumptions that the stock market may have to deal with another major terror event in the United States?
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why we invest a lot of money, not just in the United States, but overseas as well. There are 12 or so countries with major stock markets which have the highest economic freedom. And economic freedom has been shown to increase gross domestic product, which is also tied to what the stock market does. So what we do is we spread the money out among all 12 or so countries with economic freedom. And those, on average, do better than the foreign index. They do better than the United States by about 2% over the United States, and then another 4% for the countries with the most economic freedom. So they can get about 6% over the United States over the long haul. That's a significant boost in terms of return. And the countries are spread out all around the world. So if something happens in one country, just like you wouldn't want to put all your eggs in one basket, well, one basket could be a basket of just the United States, and you need to make sure you're diversified outside the U.S.
One of the things I thought was really pretty entertaining in your article was talking about planning for the averages, and this kind of gets into a couple of the other things. But you mentioned, you know, the average height of a person is 5'8". So are we going to build all of our doorways to 5'10" or whatever it is, and how that could really get us into trouble? How does that work as far as longevity is concerned?
Yeah, when we do retirement projections, we assume that a portfolio which mixes stocks and bonds will make no more than the bond portfolio. So we count on 3% over inflation. That's conservative enough that if you have some down years in the U.S. stock markets, you can just wait until the markets rebound, and that should bring you back to where you ought to be. So 3% over inflation is a conservative projection. But even with 3% over inflation, you're still only going to get to maybe a 92% chance of meeting your retirement projections. You can never get to 100% because something can always happen, and something often does.
So if 92% is not good, or maybe it is good, what should you be aiming for if you can't hit 100?
Yeah, 92% is good. What it means is that there's an 8% chance you're going to have to moderate your standard of living.
Okay.
So it means you're going to have to cut back. And if you do, just like if we were trying to give people directions to San Francisco, we wouldn't just point west, but we'd give them turn by turn, and we'd go with them as a guide. Doing a retirement projection every year is a good idea, because then you know if you're on track. And doing a retirement projection every year during retirement is good, because you can do minor course corrections that way. I heard a statistic, and I'm sure it's true. More people spend time planning their vacation or their March Madness brackets than they do their retirement every year.
You also talk a little bit in the assumptions is that we need to talk about lifestyle. And so how do people go about making assumptions about what their lifestyle would be like in retirement?
Yeah, it used to be the conventional wisdom was that your lifestyle in retirement would only be about 70% of your lifestyle while you're working. We never use that. We always assume your lifestyle will be at least as much as it was during your working years. And there's twofold reasons. Early in retirement, people travel more and they spend more. Often when they're working, they don't have time to spend money. Mm-hmm. And then later in their retirement, often it's healthcare costs that are going to boost their standard of living. So we try not to depreciate their retirement lifestyle at all.
Is it wise, and I know this is kind of a broad question, but is it wise for people to take supplemental insurance out for things like extra health care, in-home care, extended care, and those sorts of things?
Yeah, long-term care insurance is a controversial piece of financial planning, partly because financial planners can get sued for not recommending long-term care insurance. So I'll just go out on a limb and say I think it's a bad idea for most people.
Okay.
it's better to self-insure. But that's a controversial piece because it's if you need it, you need it. We recommend long-term care insurance that you plan for it. And if you put aside, you know, a significant amount of assets, $400,000 or $500,000, you should be able to self-insure.